You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Is there anything better than cracking open a cold beer and listening to your favorite podcasts? No, sir, and I'm here to tell you that the beer you should be cracking is one from our new sponsor, Circle Brewing, located in Austin, Texas at 2340 West Breaker Lane, Suite B. You can have a frosty one in their fabulous tap room where lots of seasonal specials await you, or you can get lots of their treats in the bottle or can at your local craft beer retailer. Try their award-winning Alibi Blonde or their diabolically rich Devil Knight Barrel Age Stout. They have so many solid choices, and they are the official sponsor of OneOfUs.net. Support Circle Brewing and support us, and we really need your support. There is no site without subscribers, and that depends on you. Please think about becoming a subscriber, because we cannot do this without you. The four different subscription tiers are there to give different flavors of bonus content, but we absolutely need your help, whether you sign up to give $2, $5, $10, or $25 a month. Don't be one of those people who loves something but won't lift a finger to keep it around. Help one of us and keep those podcasts coming.
Brad, have you ever seen a movie work so hard to accomplish so little? I didn't think that was possible for someone to try so hard to say not a whole lot.
Well, is your question rhetorical?
I don't know. Was that answer rhetorical?
Yes.
I don't know what words mean anymore after watching this movie. I'm not here. Everybody. So I'm Justin Zarian, and with me, I would say as usual, because you've been on so many of these reviews, is Bradley Martin. How you doing?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the as usual. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, so we're talking about this new movie here because I know this was definitely meant to turn some heads when you see the cast in this movie. Like, oh, look, J.K. Simmons, Sebastian Stan, Micah Monroe, Mandy Moore, Max Greenfield, Ian Armitage, Harold Perrineau. So many big actors. What could possibly go wrong with this stuff, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, Bradley, why don't you tell us the general premise, if you can, good luck, of this movie.
Sure. I mean, it's an incredibly simple premise. It's about a boy named Steve who grows up to be a man named Steve. And the
I like to see where that was going. It's like, wait, he grows up to be a man named something other than his name?
Well, in the credits, it's Stevie, Steven, and then Steve, I believe.
Ah, the evolution of the Steve.
Yes, the Steve-olution, if you will. So our film starts out with old Steve, played by J.K. Simmons, who is very depressed and noticeably depressed because he's, of course, a brilliant actor. No dialogue, though. So if you're okay with just watching someone look sad, then this might be your jam. And the film takes us on a journey as to why old man Steve is so sad and whether that journey is worth taking, I suppose, is up to you. The problem being, you won't really know if it was worth it until literally the last final seconds of the movie.
Yeah, and that's a big issue I have with this movie, is because it expects that you're already invested from moment one, even though you have no context for so much of the stuff that happens in the beginning of this movie. Because, you know, like you said, when you say that there's no dialogue, I don't think J.K. Simmons utters a single word in this movie. Like, did he at any point?
I think he inaudibly grumbles something towards the middle. You know, while he's fast-forwarding his voicemail. And the voicemail, you think, oh, well, he must be saying leave a message at the beep, right? No, that's actually a younger version of himself saying leave a message at the beep.
No. It doesn't even say that. It says, I'm not here.
Yeah, I'm not here, right.
Yeah, which is the name of the movie.
Yeah, roll credits. So
yeah, but that's the thing with this movie, is just that it languishes so long on J.K. Simmons looking miserable, because at this point he's like in super bad health. Like, he's gaunt, his teeth are rotting, his beard is all grown out. He is in a really bad shape. Like, so whatever's depressing him must be really depressing him. But again, everything that's going on with J.K. Simmons' story is just so the same note every single time. And I get the whole point is ultimately what he decides to do at the very end. And I don't know. Because the whole time it's flashing back and forth between different periods of his life. When he was little Stevie And then when he's Steven, you know, in his adult life. And I just, again, I have never seen a movie that tried so hard to make a point with so little effort possible. You know, like they languish on these scenes forever with these rambling dialogues about kind of nothing, ultimately.
Well, I agree with you on that, because on multiple times they bring up, if you're familiar with Schrodinger's cat, you know, if you put Schrodinger's cat in a box, Justin, is that cat rushing or dragging?
It's in this both. Case, it's absolutely dragging.
But man. Any idea why they even brought that up? That seemed completely random.
That scene literally has nothing to do with anything in this movie. Like, okay, that's the problem, is that this movie is so bogged down with philosophical nonsense, gobbledygook kind of dialogue in this movie, because there's a whole skit where they talk about the story of Schrodinger's cat. And by the time that skit ends and they go on to everything else, you're like, well, what was the point of telling that story? Like, did it tie into anything else? I'm not sure. Did it lead to anything, Brad?
For me, it reminded me of that Rick and Morty episode about Schrodinger's cat. So that was pleasant.
No, but I mean, like, in this movie, did it lead to anything? the answer is no.
I believe it was supposed to be hopeful. I don't understand why. Maybe my feelings were just like, maybe it's hopeful, so run with it. And you know how feelings are, and they kind of take over your perception because you're like, well, I'm glad that's over.
Yeah, so. It's just part of the problem, too, that I don't know if you feel the same way, but I thought the dialogue in this movie sucked throughout a lot of it. I'm like, seriously, this is the most, like, blatant, blunt, unsubtle, not very cleverly written dialogue I've seen in a while. You know, like, they spoon-feed you philosophy and emotion and thoughtful, pithy, you know, lines and that stuff. And it's just so banal throughout the entire movie.
It's kind of like if you've ever read a philosophy book, or your first philosophy book. There you go. The first book on philosophy you've ever read.
Baby's first philosophy.
Yeah. So here, I'll use myself for an example. I'm reading Baby's First Philosophy. Blah. So little Braddy, we'll call him. Little Braddy is reading Baby's First Philosophy. And then he finishes the book and he says to himself, hey, if I regurgitate a lot of this, I'll be deep. And I think that's kind of what the movie's problem is. It doesn't have any thoughts of its own. It's just, what would you call it? Gaslighting basic philosophy to sound more important than maybe it is? I'm not sure.
It's trying to do that thing that a lot of artistic directors think they're trying to do, where they're like, well, if I say these, you know, important things that I've heard other people say and I apply it to a thing that's, you know, applicable and blah, 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 then I create myself as being a more profound film because I do this in the nature of blah, blah, blah. And it's just so useless in this movie. Like, exactly. Even you find out what the actual conflict is, because, I mean, you know, from the get-go, you realize the whole point is he's contemplating whether to kill himself. You don't know why. You don't know how. But you know that that's a debate he's having because he has a pistol that he keeps going back to, like, debating on whether he should do it. And by that point, though, the problem is when you finally do learn what happens to why he thinks he wants to kill himself, it's literally the last minute of the movie. No, the last, like, 5 or 10 seconds of the movie.
I'd say, yeah, about 5 seconds.
Yeah, because that's the thing. By that point, I had lost interest. I was like, I don't care why he's trying to kill himself, because you've literally given me nothing else to latch onto this film. Because all the stuff that he's recounting in his past is, like, contributing to the stuff of why he wants to kill himself, but it's just so basic, you know? Like, I never felt like they showed me anything that was really unique in the presentation of those facts, you know?
Well, a big part of his character, and all three Stevies, I suppose, if you think about it, is he's an alcoholic. And he's an alcoholic because we're told he's an alcoholic. We don't actually see him.
Well, except for all the gratuitous scenes of him chugging down vodka, you know,
right,
in this movie.
No,
there's always a point, like, seriously, all three of his stories, even the little kid version where they show his first taste of vodka, you know, is all about him, like, becoming an alcoholic. And the whole thing is like, well, he learned it from his dad, and then started picking that up, and even his kid drinks alcohol at one point. And that's, like, the big sign of, like, the I need to change and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, you've seen better movies about alcoholism, I would argue, right?
Oh, sure. Smashed, I believe, with Winstead.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably, at least in my experience, the highlight of what alcoholism does. Of course, you have Star is Born, which is recent. If you want to see that, that's an excellent portrayal, at least for the majority of the film, what alcoholism does to a person. And then, I'm sorry, I'm about to rant about better movies.
No, but that's the thing, is that this movie makes you think of better movies about the same subjects. Like, you know, when I look at this film, I think of, like, Wildlife, about breaking marriages. I think of Star is Born in terms of alcoholism. Yeah. It just, it feels like, like you said, it has no original thoughts of its own. It's just a pastiche of various arty ideas all assembled in this very pretentious way. Because this movie, I'm sorry, I'm going to use that P word. This movie's pretentious. This movie thinks it's really, really, really smart.
Pretentious.
Yeah, nothing it says is really all that unique. And even the stuff they do to try and mess with you in your artistic perspective, like, there's a whole thing that happens at, like, maybe, like, two or three incidents in this movie where you see the various ages of Steve interact with each other. Or, like, they witness each other or see each other. And you're like, so what did that mean? And the answer is nothing. It really doesn't mean anything because literally they go back to doing whatever they were doing after that.
It kind of had this need to be surreal, you know? Like, what if we just took a moment to live in the moments we're in rather than dwell on what these moments could be? It's like, okay. And I feel like that's the big problem. Like, everything it's trying to propose, you could answer with a, okay, and it's like, and nothing. We got to go on to the next scene.
Yeah, because then it just makes the same point over and over and over and over again. And even they try to throw in little twists and turns here and there with certain revelations about, like, the kids, you know, Steve's dad that he gets into, and certain revelations about things that happen with the mom, which, man, talk about a movie that wastes good female characters for being written and directed and edited by a woman filmmaker and that stuff. The female characters in this all kind of suck, because Micah Monroe playing his wife in the middle version of Steve, talk about a thankless role.
Very disappointing. I mean, and we know she can be in a movie where the themes of her character are about sex, and she can be incredibly layered in a film like that. With this, I mean, come on. With this, she like walks up to Sebastian Stan and is like, hi. And then they have sex and then they're married. And
yeah,
that's
and
pretty then, much it. That's her whole character.
And
there's
like a
gratuitous
scene where they show them, like, you know, she gives him a favor, you know, if we're going to say it that way. And you're like,
sure.
Okay, but what did that have to do with anything? It's just there just for titillation, but for, you know, for guy. Oh, I guess for women. Or
well, since he's an alcoholic, he can't get off, supposedly, was the point of that.
Yeah.
Which,
That's the problem. Yeah, that's the problem, is just that, you know, I'm also getting to the point now with Micah Monroe. I'm like, I've seen her in so many thankless roles in so many terrible movies. Right. I'm starting to wonder, I'm like, okay, outside of It Follows, what's the other good Micah Monroe movie?
She just needs more of a chance to shine.
Yeah, she needs a different agent. But she's not, you know, again, it's not that she's not trying. She's just given so little to do in this movie. Same with Mandy Moore as the mother of the young Stevie, because she's just there to be the shrew, you know. She's just mean, she's just nasty, she has a few months of compassion, but it's always, you know, incidental to whatever's happening in the story. It's just, she's barely a presence in this. And even Matt Greenfield and people like that, they're trying so hard with the characters they're given, but it doesn't help that their dialogue is just so gosh dang simplistic. Like, there's that whole sequence where Max Greenfield's on the phone with his wife, and he's having a one-sided conversation, and I don't know why, but the way the scene is shot when you're focusing on the kid, it feels like a stage play of watching someone, like, pretend to be on a phone call. Like, what? You can't take the kids? I won't let you. You don't understand. You know, like someone, like, trying to overact to make sure that we hear exactly what's on the other side of the phone call, you know?
No, I understand. I kind of feel like he walks into his agency and is like, you know, with his hair all done up in a nice suit, and he says, do you got anything between the 1950s and the 1970s I can play? And that's kind of his forever role from now on.
Well, see, because I know him from, he's the guy from New Girl, right? Where that's where he got his big break. And you're like,
yeah,
he can do
what is
more
his name
like
in that? Schmitty?
I haven't
seen it for a while.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. It's like, yeah, he can be really funny. It's just, he hasn't really found what else he can do outside of that role. Just from the stuff I've seen him in, at least. But then again, J.K. Simmons, he's just there to be J.K. Simmons and be sad, you know? And Sebastian Stan, he's there to be Sebastian Stan, just generic white male protagonist, you know? Like, I was thinking, they're not being bad. They're just given so little to do. And the thing that kills me about this movie, for as slow and ponderous and, you know, tedious as it is to watch it, it's really freaking short. Like, it barely clocked over 70 minutes.
Yeah. It's got one of those long kill you times for some reason. You
know? Yeah. Like, literally, you're like, wow, I've seen longer movies that felt shorter than this movie.
Oh, for sure. Well, what did you think of Ian Armitage? Stevie, the littlest Steve.
See, I feel like he was the only one who did something more with his role, because it felt like they tried to give him more character as a kid. But again, it's just so... Because that's also a problem with Steve. Steve as a character throughout all of his periods seems to be a reactive character. He's a character who things happen to him, and then he just responds to them. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, because I mean, like, when you think about it, barely anything that Steve does, except for the most proactive he is in the middle, where he sometimes has to go out and do things on his own. But even then, most of the time that happens is because Micah Monroe does something to him, or other people tell him to do things. And then as the boy, because, you know, he's a helpless boy watching his parents split, it's, you know, he is just there to react to things that happen to him. And then as J.K. Simmons, he's just there reacting to the memories of things that happened to him. You know, it's just he's just not a very interesting character to follow throughout this movie.
No, I agree. I think the most interesting part of it was Ian Armitage playing Stevie, the youngest one, because at least he has like some groundwork to try and grow from, because by the time we get to Steven and Steve, old J.K. Simmons, we already know, okay, these are boring know-nothing characters that have nothing to grow off of.
I feel so sad, because there's even other great character actors, like David Koechner, who's trying so hard to not just be that redneck goofy guy. He has one scene in this movie as the defense lawyer for Stevie's dad in that divorce case, which, by the way, that's one of the worst examples of a divorce case I've ever seen in any movie ever. Like, the whole thing, it feels fake. It feels artificial, like, so much in this movie. Just the way it's shot, the way that the characters are acting in this movie. They don't act like any actual lawyers. They act like movie lawyers, you know?
Objection.
Well, like, the whole thing where the two lawyers get into their bickering argument, I'm just like, I'm sorry, even in the most heated situations in a proper divorce court, okay, maybe I haven't seen enough to know for sure, but I'm pretty sure I've seen more, you know, like, more realistic depictions of court cases than this. It's just, yeah.
No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, they were in like a giant courtroom as well, and these type of proceedings usually are handled in an office, according to my cousin, who understands the law at least, well, with his degree and all. So, you know,
he clearly doesn't know more than Michelle, what's her name, who directed this, Michelle Schumacher. She clearly understands divorce courts better. You know,
it was a cool setting, but a little silly. And most of the stuff that goes on in divorce is very cut and dry. But, you know, it made for a good scene if you wanted the parents to bicker in front of the child and be like, oh, that poor boy, you know. So, but we already had like two of those already, so.
Oh, well, you know,
it's just
what?
Kind of repeating itself.
The funny thing is, too, now that I look into it, you know why that this was such a vehicle for J.K. Simmons? Because Michelle Schumacher's his wife.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, that explains why they thought that this would be a great vehicle to make for J.K. Simmons, which, you know, I did not know that going in. And apparently she also is a Broadway actor, which explains why so many shots feel like they're stage plays. You know, just you remember that? There's that one sequence where Sebastian Stan comes in and he's talking to Michael Monroe, and literally it looks like a high school stage where she walks into the scene and goes like, how come you're drinking all the time? If you keep drinking, I'm going to leave you. And then she just walks off stage pretty much. You're like, did I miss something here, or did that feel like a school production of a scene between a married couple, you know?
Well, what was really funny is when she's dumping all his booze, right?
Yeah.
And it's like bottle after bottle after bottle.
How much vodka does he have in that house?
And then she finds booze in the toilet, and she's like, really, Steve? In the toilet? And I remember thinking, ha, I remember when that was in The Simpsons.
again, things that we've seen in better things. So it's just
exactly. So she dumps all of it.
That makes it
she dumps like, all
you
know, of it.
I wanted her to ask the questions like, Steve, do you drink alone? Does the Lord count as a person? No.
Yeah.
See, that would have been funny because also this movie desperately needed a sense of humor because it tried so hard to be funny.
Oh, sure.
And it just never
incredibly
was
bleak.
Funny. Yeah.
But
because even the scenes that they think are like cute or light and that kind of stuff, they're just kind of boring, you know? And I think that's just the general problem of this movie. It's just, it's really,
well,
really
another
lifeless
problem it had. Yeah. Like when Steve plays with a kid, I guess we could say it's his kid.
Yeah.
You can tell it's an actor who's not around kids that much.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, yeah. No, that kid was giving more genuine enthusiasm than Sebastian Stan was in that scene.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, how is this kid a better natural actor than Sebastian Stan?
No, yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. I really just feel like I'm just going to ramble when I talk about this movie. I just can't explain how unpleasant it was to watch this movie. Like, I can still say objectively it's not the worst made movie I've ever seen. It's decently shot. It's got,
I agree,
you know, I complained at first about the editing, but there's so little editing throughout this movie. It's just, it's not the problem that it's cut too much or that it's always awkward cuts. It's just so pointlessly convoluted the way it's edited, you know, just where it's trying to do the intercuttings between the different timelines. It's just, I don't know. It felt just like an exercise in like, I am very creative and I will show you how creative I am. And, you know, I thought the actors, again, they tried so hard, but they just were saddled with such nothing material. So, I don't know. Is there any last thoughts you want to give before you give your final rating?
I just have one question for you.
Okay.
Did you stick around for the post-credit sequence?
Nope, because the incident ended. I said, I am done. Is there a post-credit sequence to this movie?
There is.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You know what? Screw it. I don't care if it's a spoiler. Tell me, what happens in this post-credit sequence?
Well, no, I can't tell you because it would spoil the whole thing for everyone else.
You know what? Fine. Tell me afterwards.
Okay.
Fine. Sorry. I'm kind of pissed at this movie the more I think about it, actually. So, yeah. Anything else, Brad?
Well, I could just jump right into my final
thoughts. Here's one thing. Did the post-credit sequence make anything better or did it make it even worse?
It stayed in tune with what the movie was.
Wow, I missed so much. Wow. Yeah.
No, like his dad comes out of the shadows and is all like, I hear you like drinking. I'm starting a team of drinkers. And, you know, it zooms
up. You thought
up
you
on
were the
and
only alcoholic in the cinematic universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Get teams up with Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. And Jake Johnson is all like, hey, guys.
The drunk.
And I'm like, whoa.
They're superior.
Yeah.
No, but sorry, go ahead. You were going to say.
Oh, right. No, I'm just jumping into my final thoughts. This movie didn't make me mad, but it didn't make me happy either. It just kind of was. Very quick watch, so at least there's that. I always enjoy seeing young actors come up, so it was really cool watching, you know, little Ian Armitage from Big Little Lies and I believe Young Sheldon. I don't watch Young Sheldon, so I'm not sure if he's any good on that. But it'll be exciting to see him grow as an actor. So that was neat. Is it Sebastian Stan that was playing
middle-aged
Steve?
Yeah.
I really liked The Winter Soldier and Civil War. But one of my complaints was, you know, Sebastian doesn't get many lines in these.
Nobody gets kind of all three Steves get so little dialogue in this movie. Like,
right,
seriously.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm like, he's just kind of a badass, an awesome badass. But it'd be interesting to see something where he gets to act. So I thought, you know, J.K. Simmons, Sebastian Stan, I'm going to pick this one to watch. And nope, we still don't know if Sebastian Stan is a great actor because he's not given anything to do. So that was disappointing. I really like movies that do focus on addiction because I find it fascinating. This tale of addiction, however, seems to be, I want to say, disjointed. If it gives anybody hope, awesome. I think that's what its intention was. But maybe not. You really, someone who's struggling would have to watch it and tell me, because I can't really say anything about this. So I'm going to give it 3 fingers and 5 shot glasses.
I thought that was funny. Yes, I'm definitely not going to be as nice to this movie as you, because I thought this movie kind of sucked. Again, I like movies that are about addiction, like you said. We saw a great movie about addiction with A Star Is Born last year. You know, that one handled it naturalistically in the way of saying not just the fact that Bradley Cooper is a drug or alcohol addict, but the way that that just fuels the depressive thoughts that people can have in their heads, you know? Just like, all the stuff with his dad, all the stuff with his career, all the stuff with fame, you know, it just all amalgamates based on his internal insecurities. This movie is just, you know, has a very simple question, a very simple problem, and offers almost no solution. Like, literally, by the time you get to the end, you're just like, well, that still didn't really answer the question, movie, because there's still a possibility, I guess, assuming with this post-credit sequence that I didn't watch, just that, you know, it might just continue for another freaking infinity when it, I don't know, it's...
An infinity war?
The drunkard's infinity war. Yes, exactly. That's where we're going here. It's just, it has so little to say. And we have talked way too long about this freaking boring movie. So I'm going to give this 3 really awkward sequences with jelly beans.
Yes.
Because was that not just was that not the creepiest sequence? You know,
I thought it was going to go in a totally different direction with that, but it turns out it was presented very creepily, but didn't intend to be creepy, I guess.
Yeah, that's the weird thing where it's like, it looks like it could get creepy, but then it's so innocent that it's like, wow, I almost kind of wished it was creepy, because then it would have been a much more interesting scene, because it was just so nothing after that.
Right.
I don't know. JK, again, the same way that Micah Monroe, I'm starting to feel with her, I'm like, JK, you are eroding the goodwill that you got from Whiplash after all these movies you've done since then. Please, 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 please pick something better. Please.
Yes, return to Oz, JK.